Hey there, it's Jill Schlesinger. I'm launching a brand new show. It's called Money Moves. Follow and listen wherever you get your podcasts.
We've got our take cannons loaded and ready.
Ready.
Absolutely dominant on deep routes. Absolutely dominant on short routes.
The boys are back, baby.
Excellent separation against man coverage.
Reception, the show. Yo, what's cracking, everybody? James Kell, Matt Harmon here with you. You're listening to Reception, Perception, the show. We got a great show lined up in front of us today. I'm excited. I'm pumped, as you should be as well, because we've got training camp. Training camps have opened up all across the NFL. We got real news to talk about here, Matt Harmon.
Yeah, we've got real-ish news. We're definitely getting some, you know, a lot of receiver alignment stuff, which I'm excited about. That's obviously in our wheelhouse as the alignment bros. But I'm hoping, James, that we're changing. I'm going to say something that's just like so ridiculous. And I realize I'm self-aware that it sounds ridiculous. I hope that we're changing the culture in NFL analysis at the wide receiver position to really over-index on alignment. But I am definitely seeing people talk about, you know, X receiver versus Z receiver more than ever this year, which again, I am certainly not going to by no means am I going to take credit for that at all. However, pretty pleased about it because I've been saying for about 4 to 5 years now that especially probably even longer than that, you know, 5+ years now, we'll just go ahead and call it that. I think the football world and especially in the fantasy space has just been like behind on how much Alignment really matters when, and, you know, we all know slot versus outside, but even just how different some of the outside receivers are and what you're categorizing those players as, you know, really makes it's a huge difference, especially when you're trying to break down and project these players and certainly compare them to each other. And yeah, I definitely think we're in a good spot. Feels like people are really talking about that stuff. So I'm excited to really be getting, legitimately excited to be getting all of these like receiver alignment updates from training camp, especially one that with the Patriots that I was hoping to see it. So very excited.
Yes, we will definitely talk about AJ Brown, Romeo Doubs there in New England, Dontavian Wicks in Philadelphia. But let me just also say, look, this show in particular has been hyper focused on alignment since day one. You know, since day one, I know that alignment has, even before teaming up with Matt Harmon, I know alignment for me was a big focal point of my work in regards to talking about matchups. Got to talk about matchups, like what does slot versus slot corner look like? What does outside versus outside corner look like? How much are these guys playing the slot? How much of it are these guys playing outside? A lot of that stuff matters. And you and I have been, look, I don't think it's an exaggeration that I think that you and I in this show in particular have been at the forefront of talking about wide receivers and really hyper focusing on alignment. I'm totally with you. This is the year that it seems like that alignment for wide receivers has really kind of sort of like made that leap, like made the jump. Where it is very much at the forefront of a lot of people's minds. And yeah, I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that, again, we're not the only people, obviously, that have talked about that. But to say we're at the forefront of it, I don't think that's an exaggeration, dude.
I'll let you say it. I think we've definitely hyper fixated on it, you know, to the correct degree, really, for a long time now. And I do think it's been refreshing to see more and more folks, again, especially in the fantasy space, talk about this. Because, and you're right to say, sort of with the inception of Reception, Perception, the show, because when we started the show is when we started the website, which was beginning of 2021, you know. And I think for me, this is kind of fresh on the mind because I actually just was at the Fantasy Football Expo this weekend and got to spend a lot of time with the fantasy footballers. They were there for their first expo, Andy Holloway, Jason Moore, and Mike Wright. And, you know, I was talking with them. We were on the same flight out of Canton, Ohio, where the expo is. And I was talking with those guys because obviously I worked with them for a long time with Reception Perception in their Ultimate Draft Kit, which is still an incredible product and people should definitely check it out. They're obviously a fantastic group of guys and a great show. But, you know, around, I was kind of talking with them about this, that, you know, just there are things that I said based on Reception Perception in those early days that like I would never say now because the sample size and is just so much bigger. The historic database is so much bigger. And I think you need that to really you know, you're never going to be 100% accurate in terms of predicting outcomes, but be more accurate in the way you're analyzing and kind of categorizing these players. And one of the biggest things that informs that is that I pretty much just think every conversation with the receiver has to start with their alignment, to the point that I think I put six guys up on the on the site this morning. Six new profiles are on the site. Two of those guys are Amon-Ra St. Brown and Nico Collins. And while, and I go into this in the Amon-Ra profile, I think it's actually one of the more interesting ones just because I think there are parts about his game that probably aren't getting highlighted enough. But his role has changed a lot. And it, like, he's not just like a slot receiver anymore. Nevertheless, like, I think if you were to sit down and rank wide receivers, you know, 1 to 10 right now, which, by the way, both those guys are certainly top 10 receivers in the NFL.
Yeah.
But I think St. Brown and Nico, if you're doing it right, should be pretty close in rankings. Like, they should come up pretty close to each other.
Yep.
But the way those guys like align and line up is just so dramatically different that it's like, what the hell is the point in even comparing them? Even from like a reception perception standpoint, what they do is so dramatically different. So there, again, I think every conversation with receivers has to start with alignment. And that's something that I started reception perception in 2014, probably didn't really start crystallizing until, you know, 17, maybe 18. And then by the time we got started the site and the show, that's just been like the ethos of what we do here. Like, the starting point is we talk about alignment and then break down the individual player, because I think that every conversation, everything that they do has to begin with, like, what is their role? What are they asked to do? And therefore, like, what more can they contribute in other roles and everything like that?
Yeah, I think my comparison would be basically defensive linemen. It's not to that level, you know, where a D tackle and a D end are obviously completely different positions, but you say, okay, these guys are on the D line, right? So, like, when you say D line, that's like saying wide receiver, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like, hey, listen, are we talking about a D tackle or are we talking about defensive end here, you know? Because these are two completely different spots. Yeah. Their roles are different, all that. So, I view wide receiver similarly to, and maybe linebacker's probably more accurate. Like, you know, you got guys that are.
I think your defensive line comparison is perfect.
Yeah.
I think it's perfect because, but it's not discussed that way at all, right?
No, not at all.
Absolutely. Like, essentially, if you break it down, like, you'd be like comparing, I don't know, Myles Garrett to Vince Wilfork or something like that. You know, they both play on the defensive line, but they play completely different positions. And,
yeah, exactly.
But they have. From a base standpoint, like, your two things are rush the passer and stop the run.
Stop the run. Yeah,
but exactly. Like, it goes, we all acknowledge it goes so, so, so much deeper than that. And I do think receiver, it's like, your job is to run good routes and catch the football. Like, that's stop the run, rush the passer. I get it. But, like, we all should acknowledge it goes much, much deeper than that.
Yeah. Okay. Enough of this, hyper fixation on alignment.
Well, now let's actually talk about it.
Yeah. Let's actually talk about it. Take it from the theoretical into the realistic here. Tech McMillan is expected to play more in the slot. That's a newish report from Cameron Wolf. And Cameron Wolf is anticipating a huge jump in production as well. We're talking about a guy that last year in Teteroa McMillan had 70 catches for 1,000 yards and 7 touchdowns. Our guy Cameron Wolf, man, he's like, hey, 1,500 yards is a possibility for Teteroa McMillan this year. And I think the major question is, okay, how much more can he be utilized in the slot? And are you buying this report that he may play more in the slot?
Well, yeah, I think we can separate those into two different things here, because like the 1500 yard part of it, we'll see about that.
Right? Yeah.
We'll see about that. That's going to involve a big change in just this passing ecosystem. Okay. So that's the biggest thing. But do I buy that he can play more in the slot? Absolutely. Number one, because it would be pretty difficult for him to play less in the slot than he did last year. There were 117 wide receivers that ran at least 200 routes last season. Teteroa McMillan, his 15.2% slot rate on passing plays ranked 101st. He is squarely in that like X receiver bucket of Cortland Sutton, Nico Collins, and DK Metcalf, who are all 102nd to 104th. On that list. So again, just starting point, it would be pretty difficult for him to play less in the slot, you know, like him playing 20% in the slot, you know, shoot him playing 25%. That would obviously be a significant increase. And I think a welcome increase. And honestly, before we talk about McMillan and Carolina in particular, like just in particular.
Yeah.
I generally think like 20% should be the bare minimum for like any number one receiver. And I do think Tedrick McMillan is a number one receiver. I think he's got really good. I think he's got a really good number two on his team, Jalen Coker. And I think there's going to be times, especially if Teteroa stays in this X only role, which again, we're hypothesizing is not going to happen. But I actually think there would be times where their production could be kind of close, like on a week to week basis. But that's obviously just because I think Jalen Coker is a stud. I think he's awesome. But, you know, McMillan is he's a number one receiver. He definitely can be. Like, I think those three names that I threw out there, Courtland Sutton, Nico Collins, DK Metcalf, Nico obviously is significantly better than just an X only receiver type. He should be much more used in other formations and other alignments and everything like that. And then Courtland Sutton, DK Metcalf, I'm like, yeah, those guys are X only players. They're pretty much X only players, but Teteroa is definitely closer to like the guy that should not be just used at X. I definitely think he can be. I think he belongs, and I said this in his prospect profile, he belongs in the kind of receiver family of like a Drake London type. I think Drake London was a slightly better prospect than mm-hmm. Teteroa. And, you know, obviously I've just seen more of Drake London in the league. That's not really like a fair comparison to line them up against each other right now. But a big part of unlocking Drake London was taking him from an X only alignment player and using him more off the ball than on the ball the last two seasons, and being a guy that was like 30%+ in the slot. And that's, I think, we're not talking about turn Teteroa McMillan into, you know, Chris Godwin or Cooper Kupp or, you know, something like that. But even having him be like a 30%+ slot player, like a Drake London, I definitely think it would be a significant difference.
I will say this, there was only a hand or maybe a few games where he was over 20%, maybe like around 20% in regards to slot usage last year. And those were some really productive games for him.
Yeah.
We're talking about he had a game against Buffalo where he had 10 targets, 7 catches for 99 yards against a Buffalo team there that where he played about 20% in the slot. Then he also in Atlanta played 20% in the slot and again was hyper productive there too. 12 targets, 8 catches, 130 yards and 2 touchdowns. So yeah, I mean, this is just at 20% usage, Matt, right?
Like, right.
What does this look like if it ends up being 25-30% usage, where I do think that, you know, he could get some more favorable matchups, a few more layup targets, and utilize a little bit better in terms of what he can do after the catch here as well. So yeah, this would be interesting, man. I tell you what, it would be really, really interesting, and I'll be interested to see how they move around some of the other guys too, as you were mentioning, you know what I mean?
Yeah, the other guys are the key part of this because, you know, this is how this happens sometimes. Like, remember, I think it was that Falcons game, actually, and that was, you know, the 30-27 win in week 11. You know, that was like a moment where even Dave Canales said, like, yeah, this was a game where we intentionally not just put Teteroa McMillan in the slot, but made sure to get him the ball when he was in mm-hmm. the slot, like designed plays for him to be there. And you know, then of course people are like, well, why weren't you doing that all along? Like, you just figured that out, which I think is a really unfair criticism of Canales in that moment, because you got to remember like the context of why McMillan wasn't playing in the slot more. Their receivers, after, you know, they traded away Adam Thielen, which ended up aging really well, that trade for them, because he didn't even finish the season with Minnesota. They got a 4th-round pick back for that one. And then like they trade Adam Thielen, then Jalen Coker gets hurt right away. Their other receivers in the room were not just Xavier Leggett, but their main slot receiver was Hunter Renfro. And like Hunter Renfro in the year 2025, you know, all respect to him in the world after he took a year away from football and like he medically retired.
Yeah.
Like he lost a bunch of weight, the whole deal. He's as slot only as slot only gets in the year 2025. So like in order to play him as your third receiver, you can't then move the rookie Teteroa McMillan around. And so that's why as the season goes on here, you see games with that higher slot rate because Jalen Coker was back, and Coker is a guy. I mean, shoot, look at him in late in the season, not just the playoff game against the Rams, but even starting like the first game against the Rams, Jalen Coker's like lining up as the X receiver, the isolated X, and winning on like big boy go routes. Like he's definitely in like the power slot family, I think Jalen Coker is, but he's a big body who has good release moves against press man coverage and can play as a boundary receiver. So he's a big part of why they'll be allowed to do this more. And then drafting Chris Brazel, I think to push Leggett for the third receiver spot. I don't think Leggett is like unplayable. I think he's probably like a functional, you know, third or fourth receiver, but he's not a guy that is ever, he was never a guy that was going to be maximized at X, but he's at least a bigger body that can credibly take snaps there. So even with him, I think that's not the worst thing in the world, but like, let's just say Brazel, he's a key part of this too, ends up emerging as that third receiver. Well, he's like he's another big body perimeter vertical receiver. So I actually think them drafting Brazel was a big indicator of their intentions to play McMillan more off the line of scrimmage and as a slot player here. I think that was kind of like a declaration of intent for them. And, you know, Canales even talked about like Brazel being a space clearer, like essentially saying, we think this guy can be a sacrificial X receiver, which if you go and look at like his profile, that's he obviously has a very incomplete profile. He's a raw guy. He's a work in progress, but you kind of hope that he can. And I liked this guy better coming out of college, but you kind of hope that he can be an Alec Pierce player who starts out as very much a sacrificial X. But then by year four of his career, he's doing more than that. As we all know, Alec Pierce has now done more than that based on his final year with the Indianapolis Colts. So I do want to talk just a little bit more about McMillan individually and what he can do as a slot option and like his alignment. But the other guys are key to this, like Coker's emergence, drafting Brazel, and them being a team, James, that I think is going to go against the trend where everybody else is getting bigger and heavier and playing more tight ends. I kind of think this team spreads it out with big bodied receivers and looks to exploit matchups with a little more motion, a little more creativity in the passing game, as opposed to kind of what I think Canales, like he comes from more of a heavier world and wants to run the ball and all that stuff. I actually think this is a team that's going to spread it out, let Bryce Young play point guard, which is where I think he's best.
I'm really hoping for, I like XL, man. I like Xavier Leggett. I mean, obviously he's an incomplete player big time. But I really hope that for this upcoming season, he never plays X receiver. I hope he just is always a flanker slot guy. And that ends up giving some flexibility here. And again, he should not be, at this point, he should not be a full-time player, right? Like that's just not, that's just not in the cards, you know? But like, again, if we've got Brazel out there, if you got, XL out there in the slot and you got, you know, a little bit of, Teterola McMillan out there too, I just want to see him kind of get into a position to succeed. I think if Dave Canales can find, get this guy on like, you know, deep overs or like drag routes, just something moving horizontal. I mean, give this guy the QJ treatment, you know, give him the Quentin Johnson treatment and just let him kind of make plays, sort of after the catch. Okay. Should we move on to New England or you got another point here?
Just real quick, just on McMillan individually. Yes. So the key thing is yes, the slot rate will definitely go up. In the game's charter for reception perception, he was 17.6%. I mentioned the full season, 15.2%. So that's going to go up. There's no question about that. He also took zero snaps in the backfield, like stone zero in the games charted for RP. That, I think, even getting that to, you know, 2%, 3% would be like a big deal. You know, shoot, we get up to like JSN, right? Last year, 6%, 6.6%, while he was still the most outside on-ball receiver on the team, you know, where he's
right.
But again, just a little bit of creativity, a little bit of motion, I think makes a big deal here. So really the thing to see is like the rate of snaps off the ball as well. He was on the line of scrimmage on 81% of his sampled snaps. These are the guys he's like around. It's like Marvin Harrison Jr., Romeo Doubs, ironically, we're going to talk about him. Yeah. The other guys who are over 80% is like Alec Pierce, George Pickens, Mike Evans, Nico Collins, and Kyle Williams. Like they're all just like pure X receivers. I just think he could be a little bit closer to like a JSN who was at 66%. And if we start to get into the Drake London zone, again, he's the best kind of corollary here to this, where his first 2 years under Arthur Smith, Drake London, 85% snaps on the ball. Drake London in year two, 82% on the ball. Then these last 2 years under Zach Robinson in a much more motion heavy, kind of a more of Z receiver role, he's down to 47% and 46.7%. So I think that's kind of the key number to look for here. And my last point on all this is Yeah. I definitely think that Tetero McMillan can do it, right? While playing full X receiver, he was at about a 78% success rate versus zone, which is solid. But as a prospect, he was over 80%. So I think that's something that him reading those coverages out, I think is a pretty good strength of his work in the intermediate area, like getting on those big outbreaking routes from the slot on like sail concepts, which I'm going to be obsessed with talking about this year because I think it's going to be a source of big plays for teams. I think that's going to be key for him. And then again, the real thing here to note is like, you know who does want to do this more? Tetero McMillan. Like my conversation with him at the Super Bowl, like, and I might have linked this in his reception perception profile, but if not, you can find it on YouTube. Just my interview with him. One of the things he talked about was, noting these receivers like JSN and Puka Nacua who move all around the formation. He was talking about this. He's like, that's how you make sure you like your number one receiver doesn't get taken out of the game. You know, maybe you got to get your playmakers the ball. It's like by moving them around and breaking all these coverages and stuff. And I just have done this long enough now and talked to enough players to know like when this guy who you said, remember his the whole kerfuffle about him as a prospect was he doesn't actually watch tape. He doesn't like football, blah, blah, blah. That whole like nonsense thing, that video that went around with him when he's talking about like, oh, no, I'm watching how these receivers are used. And like those guys are getting the football a ton. And like I need to get the football more. I need to move around more. That means like me, I should be doing that. I just know that's like what he is implying here. So
okay,
yeah. I'm sure this has been a conversation with him and the coaching staff and everything. I think that's why. They took Chris Brazel. I do think that's like a key thing of intent here, signing Coker to the extension. So I think they've got the guys to move McMillan around, and I think he's got the skills to do it.
I know people are wondering, sail concept when we're talking about football concepts here. So basically the outside receivers running that clear route, and Matt, correct me if I'm wrong here, but you've got the slot guy essentially running like it either an out or like a corner, corner route, basically an outbreaking route where the outside receiver is clearing out, especially in cover two, right? Like clearing out that corner area. And then the inside receiver kind of sort of takes that vacated spot. It really puts defenses like in stress mode because they're like, okay, well, where are we going with the defense here? And then you've got a guy running, I believe, like a drag route underneath.
Like
a drag, right?
A little shallow concept. The check down essentially there. Yeah, that's the take the layup here if it's not there down the field. But yeah, it puts
flooding aside.
Right. And it puts defenses in conflict, as you mentioned, James. And like sometimes it can be the inside guy, the outside guy switching those, you know, the clear route or the corner route versus the true like out cut. You can invert that. Teams are really creative about that now these days. And I do think like that is a way that teams are looking to get explosive plays against some of the coverages that you talked about that are proliferating around the NFL right now. It's also a really good way when you can condense the receivers in those heavier personnel groupings. It's a big way to get explosive plays. Also, lastly, like these guys, you know, the Josh Downs and the Jaden Reeds, and obviously this doesn't apply to Tetero McMillan or any of these big beefy boys in Carolina in the wide receiver room. They've got like one of the biggest receiver rooms in the NFL. Yeah. But those kind of smaller slot guys, if you can, that's a way to like line those two receivers up on one side, the two tight ends on the other side to do the drag, bring that drag route back around. It's a way to get those guys on the field in two receiver sets so that you mimic a slot rep essentially when it's the two guys to one side in a quote nominal two receiver set. So I just think that's like going to be a theme in NFL offenses that year. It really already started to be last year. And again, the last thing too is you use this a lot on like play action. This is like a play action heavy concept. We know that play action obviously is an efficiency booster for NFL offenses.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
Okay, moving on. Romeo Doubs in New England to be a big slot in New England. That, according to Evan Lazar, a team reporter. I kind of use air quotes around team reporter because
he works for the team. Evan's a sharp guy, though.
Evan's a really sharp guy. A former colleague of both of ours.
Former colleague, yes.
At NFL Network. He was a big-time researcher at NFL Network was really good at his job. I think he's been, I think he's done a really good job working for New England too. But he's a team reporter, which is kind of sort of, I don't know, like it's an oxymoron a little bit. You know, you work for the team, you're reporting on the team. I don't know how that works. Anyways, Dubs is to replace Stephon Diggs's role in the offense. And remember, Stephon Diggs caught 85 catches last year for 1,000 yards and 4 touchdowns. This kind of sort of works in conjunction with A.J. Brown to play some slot, but mostly as an outside X. I know this is in direct conflict with what you would like to see from A.J. Brown, kind of sort of being like the 70-30 guy outside-inside.
Yeah. Obviously, again, we'll see what the ratio is. I would think that, like, at this point in AJ's career, he should be somebody that is a little more off the ball, used a little more in the slot. But honestly, it does follow, you know, Evan's not just the only one reporting on this. The other folks have reported on this as well, that does seem to be like the plan here is for Romeo Dobbs to be kind of essentially replacing Stephon Diggs as the slot option and like a Z in two receiver sets. And then,
confused, you know,
maybe
that,
kicking into the slot. Yeah. I'm in like wait and see mode on that one. Also, Kayshon Booty is apparently going to play the Z receiver role if he's going to stay on the team, which, you know, I actually think that might be better for Kayshon Booty than being like a sacrificial X, which is essentially what he was last year. That does make me, I think Booty, especially if he's going to stay on the Patriots, and even if he gets traded, honestly, he's somebody I need to chart this year to kind of get a good handle on how that could go. But yeah, it does. It's in a way, it's like opposite of what I would probably want to do, which is if we're trying to maximize AJ Brown, I do think like him being an outside on a ball receiver for God. I mean, it can't possibly be 80-80. I think that would be shocking if it's 80% outside, 80% on the ball. I would be a little surprised about that. And I don't love that for him individually. Mm-hmm. I am at least like, I'm curious. And I mean that like not derogatory. I'm curious about Dobbs as more of a big slot because I do think like his profile is very much from 2025 X receiver coded. You know, he's outside better against X, press man. Yeah. He's an outside on ball player, but he does run really good like breaking routes. And I wonder if that could translate well to like being a Z slot option. And it actually makes me like from a fantasy standpoint pretty interested in Romeo Dobbs, like it's just funny. Like it kind of breaks your brain a little bit because you would think like you want to role cater to the big name, the guy that's the number one receiver who, you know, I think showed some signs of decline last year, although maybe they just straight up disagree with me on that. And as I've said on the show, maybe like him playing through that hamstring injury was a big part of it. Like, I'm just going to end up being wrong about that, but that's possible. But if they're role catering to Dobbs and he's getting some of these easier matchups, I actually think like he could be a guy that is sneaky productive this year and could end up being like a guy that goes what in the deep 40s at wide receiver in fantasy and ends up being like a, I don't want to say like a massive hit, but you know, somebody that productive. Could end up being like a top 30 receiver in fantasy if Drake May still kick ass. Like, I think that's possible.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I'm with you. I'm confused as to why they would view AJ Brown as like this like static X, you know? I don't know. We'll see how it works out, man. But we know that again, when it was like that in Philadelphia, it didn't work out that well. And also too, I think AJ Brown is at a place, you know, hey, listen, I'm kind of sort of talking out my ass here, but I'm just saying, like, I think he's at a place too where he wants to be statistically productive, right? Like, not just like, I'm sure winning ball games will be great, but shoot, Philadelphia won a lot of ball games. He was not happy, man. So, like, it's just, like I said, I think he wants to be statistically relevant. If you want to be statistically relevant on a winning team, he wants both of those things, right? Like, he just doesn't want to win. He wants to win and be the guy. I just, like I said, man, I'm confused by what New England is thinking here, in regards to AJ. Move this guy all around the formation, drop some plays for him. Like, I don't know, man. Yeah. I mean, again, this could be a Josh McDaniels thing where he's just so hard headed about it. But like I said, hey, you know, I'll say this too, Matt. The thing that would worry me too, is that if it doesn't work out at outside X, Josh McDaniels is not the guy that's going to change. He's not, he's not going to change the role for this guy. He's going to say, no, you need to do this the Patriot way. You got to come in. You got to be a team guy. You're going to have to like fit in where you get in, man. Like, he's going to not be the guy that's going to be like, oh, you know what? I messed up. Let me move around AJ Brown. That's not going to happen. That's why I'm even more curious as to how this kind of sort of plays out.
Yeah, I think McDaniel's pretty like, obviously just, wouldn't say he's like an archaic coach, games passed him by or anything. I think they did some good stuff, like some really sound things last year, but he's not necessarily most on the cutting edge in terms of schematics and design to like exploit good receiver matchups and everything. It was a pretty much like kind of a, again, they had an X receiver in Kayshon, but he was basically the X all the time. And then when he got hurt, Kyle Williams was the X all the time. And then they had a guy in Stephon Diggs who they moved all around the formation. And he was really the productive player as the Z slot option. And then kind of their third receiver, Matt Collins, was just pretty much like a big Z receiver. And I think that for AJ Brown, if he's just a player he was in the full season sample in reception perception last year, you know, it's not terrible, right? Like it's actually still like a functional X receiver. And I think the player comparisons for him in the player comp tool are actually like three of the top four ones are Odell Beckham 2019, DK Metcalf 2024, Terry McLaurin 2024, and DJ Moore back in 2021, interestingly enough. I wouldn't say that those are like the best years of all those guys' career, no. Except McLaurin, obviously, in 2024. He scored a bunch of touchdowns, but that was in like an X receiver vertical role. And yeah, I just think like if AJ Brown plays in that role, like I do think he'll be a good receiver for the Patriots, a good starting receiver for the Patriots. But I just think his production would be best maximized moving him around the formation. But if it's going to be Romeo Doubs getting those like opportunities, it again is really interesting just because some of the routes that he runs really well. Like his three best routes are post dig slant, like these in breakers. Okay. Drake May is really good at throwing those routes. Like he's good at throwing over the middle of the field. We've talked about this. And yeah, I just think it'll be really interesting. He's getting like the off ball movement stuff. I think he could be like sneaky. I don't know if I want to say really productive, but like pretty, like more productive than he is expected to be as the second receiver in New England.
Well, let me just put it to you this way, man. If Romeo Doubs has like, I don't know, 80 catches for 900 yards and 5 touchdowns, that's extremely productive, you know, for a number two guy who, again, there's like zero expectations. And again, I agree with you. Like, if he's going to be the primary slot guy, why can't he catch 80 for 900 and 4 to 5 touchdowns, man? Like, I think that's absolutely doable. And as you mentioned, somebody that no one is talking about, somebody that no one is thinking about statistically right now is Romeo Doubs. So I don't know. We'll see.
One thing I want to do, James, before, and I think we should do it on, I don't know if I'll do it on this show or if I'll like do it from in more of a fantasy standpoint, like on my other show, but I want to think about like second receivers who could outproduce their teammate just based like the Devontae Smith, Mekhi Lemon discussion we had a couple weeks ago.
I'm putting it in the rundown, man.
Based on like their easier role, like the layup targets and stuff like that, as opposed to the number one guys, like a true pure X. I think Doubs and Brown, if this is the way he's going to line these receivers up, it wouldn't be the most likely candidate in the world, but I think there would be some universes where like Romeo Doubs catches more passes than AJ Brown this year, if that's how they roll these guys out from a role perspective. But I don't know.
I like it. I like it a lot. Again, we talk about AJ Brown coming from Philadelphia, a new wide receiver in Philadelphia. Dontavian Wicks is apparently drawing Keenan Allen comparisons. Head coach Nick Sirianni. Head coach Nick Sirianni compared newly acquired wide receiver Dontavian Wicks to Keenan Allen, saying, quote, "The way they are off the line of scrimmage, the way they are at the top of the route, the way they are with the ball in their hands, it just really reminds me of Keenan Allen." Thoughts on Dontavian Wicks and Keenan Allen comparisons, friend?
I mean, look, do you think, look, I'm laughing.
Yeah.
Because I'm really trying to not make the joke about like, hey, do you think Nick Sirianni typed this into ChatGPT to pop this one out?
Oh, he definitely did. Yeah, I think he did.
because that was like a headline recently that he used ChatGPT this offseason to find fresh motivational stories for his team.
Right.
Which, you know, whether that's true or not, and you know, everybody can have their judgment on that. I wouldn't have let that one get out if I was Nick. I wouldn't let that one get out.
I talked about this on my radio show, man. Like, if you are using ChatGPT to come up with inspirational stories, like ways to motivate your team, you're not a good coach. Like, I'm sorry. You know, like, you as a head coach, you don't have that many. I mean, you have a lot of responsibilities, and one of those responsibilities is to be a motivating person. If you're using ChatGPT to motivate people, that's not good. That is not good. So I don't know.
Well, and I don't want to totally sidebar us here on an AI discussion. However, when you say, like, I used, and again, let me just admit this right now. I didn't read the story. I just saw the headlines. So maybe this is what the story is. And I'm being a completely unfair to Nick. But I'm actually saying this to try to be fair to Nick Sirianni, if you think about it. If you're going to, like, if you're going to, like, tell reporters, or this is going to be a story, like, and they're going to write, like, he used ChatGPT to find fresh motivational stories, whatever. You need to be, like, very specific. Like, I need to know what the prompt was. Like, because
I need to know what the prompt was.
That's actually kind of fine, like, in a way, if you're just like, hey, what are some cool stories that I, you know, could use to, you know, like, give me some, you're just using it basically as a search tool. Like, hey, I want to find some cool stories to, like, tell people.
Right.
Let's be like, all right, find me, you know, hey, ChatGPT, Claude, you know, whatever. Find me, like, really good restaurants that have this, this, that, and the other, you know, like, okay, you just try to find the, he's just using it as a search tool. Maybe he's using it as a search tool. I just, like, if we're going to do the whole, he used ChatGPT to do this, that, and the other. My advice to people would just be, if you don't want to get dunked on in the headlines, you know, in the unfair world of social media, you're going to want to be really, really specific about that. You know, you're going to want to really dive into that. You can't just use that as a throwaway comment, essentially. And again, maybe it was the whole, maybe there was more to the story and I haven't read it, but whatever.
No, there's not. There's not. Okay. I read the story. There's not. He used ChatGPT like Google. Which is fine, but
it's fine. But again, I would have just been, like, really detailed about exactly how I'm going to need to see the master plan essentially. Anyways, whatever.
Okay. All right.
Did he type in, you know, Dontayvion Wicks, Keenan Allen comps into ChatGPT? Maybe. Dontayvion Wicks, I got a little candle still lit for Wicks, you know, pun intended. Sure. His rookie season was legit really promising. Now, I do think he got a little bit, like, overrated and overstated for his separation skills. But one of the things I really liked about him was his release moves off the line of scrimmage. 72.7% success rate versus press coverage in his rookie season. Now, let me just go ahead and pull back the curtain here for the listeners. Keenan Allen's success rate versus press in his best years, a lot higher than 72.7%. A lot higher, okay, but from a percentile mark, 72.7%. That's like a 69th percentile, you know, pretty nice 69th mm-hmm. percentile, 72.7%. Okay, that's promising. You got to build on that though, and that was the problem for Wicks, is that I think he actually took a step back, and this is borne out in his reception perception charting. His success rate versus man, zone, and press all went down from year two. Or year one to year two. And that was kind of the issue there with Wicks, is that he didn't really take the next step as a route runner, as a separator. But he does have pretty good technical prowess in terms of his releases at the line. And I do think that's obviously, again, off the line of scrimmage, the way they are at the top of the route. Yeah, some of Wicks' best routes are those breaking routes where he have the moves, you know, to get open on the breaker at the break point and everything. So, yeah, I mean, archetype wise, you know, it's not the worst comparison in the world. So yeah, that's where I stand on that. I actually think Wicks's usage is going to be interesting in the offense. Like, yeah, I think he'll be the third receiver. And we were talking about in the Tetero McMillan at the end of that discussion, like, some of these outbreaking routes on play action. That's actually where Wicks, Dontayvion Wicks, was really good last year for the Packers, is they kind of kicked him into the slot and used him on these bigger outbreakers off play action. And he's so good at the break point of his routes.
All right.
That he would get some separation there. I'm interested to see if, you know, kind of what the slot distribution is between him and Mekhi Lemon, who they draft in the first round, is obviously really good out of the slot as well. So, yeah, I'm interested in Wicks's usage out of the in this offense overall, but I don't think he'll be the next Keenan Allen. That would be my prediction.
Okay. All right.
We'll see. But I'll check with Claude. I'll check with Claude later, and I'll get back to everyone.
Hey, you don't need to go to Claude, bro. You just need to go to receptionperception.com, and you need to go to the player comparison tool. That's all you need to go to.
Can I tell you, some of his player comparisons actually are, like, annoyingly interesting.
Okay.
You know, like, Roma Dunze's rookie season is a player comp for
Emeka Buka, I just saw, is on Buka, here, too.
Yeah, yeah, Chris Emeka Godwin. Calvin Ridley, 2024. Terry McLaurin, 2024. Some good players here. Okay. Then the first one, though, is like Keelan Cole. You know.
Okay. You got Chase Claypool.
Well, I'm looking at the rookie season. You're looking at the 2024. Second season is, which I think actually makes sense, is like all the comps there are like moderate comps.
Okay.
But yeah, we do even there. It's second season. Yeah, Buka and Adunze also pop up there. Their rookie season. So interesting stuff for those two guys. As they head in here, but yeah, I do actually think the drop off between some of the comps in year one, between year one to year two, actually do kind of illustrate what I'm talking about a little bit, that I think he took a step back, you know, from year one to year two. But I do think he was a nice role player for the Packers last year, and I think he could be a pretty good role player at bare minimum. Honestly, the thing that sucks with Wicks is that, radical candor here. We obviously contributed to this here at Reception Perception. One of our highest viewed YouTube videos on the channel is Dontayvion Wicks the Packers' best receiver. That's like one of the best performing YouTube videos we've ever done from a view standpoint. I think we know the answer to that now.
What the hell did we talk about? That was a long time ago.
That was after his rookie season, pretty promising rookie season that I mentioned there. I think the tough part for him is that he just got. You know, in that video, I think I'm pretty sure I said, like, no, Jaden Reed is actually their best receiver, which, you know, even that doesn't look correct right now. So we'll see about that.
That's okay.
But we'll see about that after this year. But my point in saying that is that, obviously Wicks, I think, got a little overhyped. We contributed to that. I think we were a little more correct on backing off the hype in year two when people were still kind of doubling, tripling down on one of the best separators in the NFL. But even if he's just like a good number three receiver, who can play, I think, all three receiver positions and is like a nice role player. It's a hell of a good outcome for a fifth round pick, whether it is for the, obviously the current team that he plays for or his first team that drafted him.
Somebody who will not be a tertiary player for the Eagles and did not take a step back at all was Devontae Smith. He is anticipated to be the number one. And I think a lot of people look to him and say, okay, we see an undersized guy. We know he's played outside, but can he play outside full time and be the number one in a productive passing attack? And your answer to that question would be what, Matt Harmon?
Hell yeah, big dog. Of course he can be. And the good part about this is this actually isn't like something we need to do in theory and like parse, which is kind of what we obviously had to do with Jaxon Smith-Njigba last year. I was joking with somebody this weekend that it is kind of a bummer that every receiver discussion seems to it's a bummer, and it's a good thing that every receiver discussion seems to come back to Jaxon Smith-Njigba because he's an awesome player. I love talking about him, but it's like, who's this year's Jaxon Smith-Njigba? Everybody's got a different candidate for it, and yet they're all kind of the same. Whatever. We don't have to really do this whole thing in theory, which we did with JSN last year, which is like, yeah, he's a really good slot player, but he's really good against man coverage, so I think he can transition to the outside. Like he can do that going into his third NFL season, which is what we said and we were correct about. Mm-hmm. And you could do that with Devontae Smith. We will talk about his success rate versus man in 2025. But we actually have proof of concept we've seen him do this. And I think this gets lost in the discussion here. Like, yes, you know, they kind of kept a lot of the tenets of what Kellen Moore was doing from like a player deployment standpoint between 2024 and 2025, even though I don't think Kevin Petullo was nearly in Kellen Moore's ballpark in terms of the finger on the pulse of what we need to do offensively here. But Smith's role was pretty similar in terms of from like a pre-snap standpoint, you know, what he was. He was essentially the slot receiver for this team while A.J. Brown was the outside X receiver. 2024, Smith took 48.9% of his snaps outside, 38.7% on the line of scrimmage. That was pretty much the same in 2025, where he took 44.8% of his sample snaps outside. He was on the line of scrimmage for just under 41%. But like, we had a three-year run from his rookie season and then the first 2 years with A.J. Brown, where Smith was primarily the X receiver. 86, 81, 73% sampled snaps outside those 3 years. 77, 70%, and 62% on the line of scrimmage in those 3 years. So like, we have the three-year sample size for it. The film was great, and he averaged 63.6 yards per game in those seasons while sharing the field with an elite wide receiver in A.J. Brown. So like, again, we already kind of have proof of concept that Smith can play. Like, that's not to me, that is not even close to like a question here. Like, can he play outside? Can he play X? Yes, we've already seen it, and he was good while he did it.
You take a look at some of the individual routes that he ran and the ones that are really eye-catching. 93% success rate on out routes, 94.5% success rate on curl routes. And again, these are very popular routes with DeVonta Smith. 10% route participation on outs, 19% route participation on curl routes, where again, let me just reiterate, nearly 95% success rate on those curl routes, man. All in all, when you kind of sort of take a look at it from an overview standpoint, 76% success rate versus man. Again, good benchmark there would be 70. He's at 76%, really, really good number. 85% success rate versus zone. Again, if we're taking a look at like what we're looking for, 80% is generally that cutoff point. He's at 85%. And then, man, 77.6% success rate versus press coverage. Again, we want that around, I'll say like 72, 73%. For him to be at 77% is, again, really, really impressive. But overall, man, this is a player profile that when you take a look at it, Matt, this guy, special separator when we're talking about runner routes.
85th, 90th, and 84th percentile success rate versus man, zone, press in that order. The man and press scores actually were even better in 2025. Not crazy. By much. Like, it wasn't as something like it's a significant drop off or anything like that. But yeah, I mean, he was number two in the league behind only his teammate A.J. Brown in success rate versus man coverage the previous season in 2024. He was 80% success rate versus press. And I kind of think some of that has to, again, those are minor blips back, whereas, you know, A.J. Brown obviously took a bigger step back in terms of his overall success rates. But that to me could, like, minor drop offs like that can be contributed to like a factor of, well, the offense isn't as well designed, and, you know, the passing game was a little bit more static, certainly. And maybe I'm not saying it enough by calling it a little bit more static than what it was between Kellen Moore and Kevin Petullo in 24 and 25. So like, something I do think like small dips like that can be attributed to things beyond just like the player's individual control. I don't think that there was any drop off in Smith's individual play whatsoever. As a matter of fact, you could argue that him turning in at 84.6% success rate versus zone coverage, which is going to be one of the top scores from 2025, like I said, 90th percentile in reception perception history, that's the best of his career. Actually better than some of the stuff he was doing early in his NFL tenure while he was playing as a boundary X receiver, by the way. But I actually think he's gotten better about like reading out coverages and settling into soft spots, particularly just like where Jalen Hurts wants to throw the football. And that's something that's really fascinating about Smith this year, and one of the reasons I'm so bullish on him from just what he's going to do in real life this year. Mm-hmm. Is you mentioned those routes and like parsing his route tree individually. Yeah. I think that's the part that makes me excited about him being the featured receiver in this offense, which I think, James, if we're being honest with ourselves, is going to try to split the difference a little bit, at least for this year, between what Jalen Hurts has liked to do previously and like where they clearly want to go. Basically, everything they've done this offseason, from hiring Sean Mannion to you know, drafting Mekhi Lemon and everything. Yeah. They clearly want to be more of like a McVay Packers type of offense. They want to keep, you think Howie Roseman doesn't want to keep with the trends of the league and the offense that is currently, you know, proliferating around the NFL and is one of, and is just an efficiency print fest. Of course he does. He's a smart guy. They're a very, very smart organization. So they bring in Sean Mannion to be the play caller here. I think they want to kind of go into that world, but I also think they will, from an adjustment standpoint, have to still do some of what I would call like the spread and shred, more static alignment routes and everything that Jalen Hurts likes.
Right.
And you talked about that 94.5% success rate on curl routes. I know that that's like curl routes are kind of a trigger phrase at this point for Eagles fans after that was like they've all thought like hitch routes were the reason that, you know, the offense went to hell last year. But like, you know, we're really good at running those routes is Devontae Smith. I mean, he's really good at like selling vertical, even though actually I would say we'll come back to some of the weak points of his game. Like the vertical stuff, pure speed down the field, maybe one of the weaker points of his game, but like he can really drop his weight. He plays really good timing and tempo, especially against man coverage. So him working some of those static routes, you know, just on the straight line vertical stuff, he can really do that obviously extremely well and he's going to separate well. But then at the same time, we talked about like sail routes and outbreakers off play action, especially from condensed formations and heavy personnel. 93% success rate on the out route for Devontae Smith. In addition to when they want to get under center and run play action, and you're that X receiver, which is what he's going to be this year. It ain't going to be Wicks. It ain't going to be Mekhi Lemon. It's going to be Devontae Smith as the X receiver. That's when you're going to be running a lot of digs. You're going to be running a lot of posts. Both of those he ran at an above average rate last year, had an 85% success rate on digs and just under 79% success rate on posts. He's going to make a lot of explosive plays. So when they want to live in that world, he can do it. When they want to live in the old world, he can do it. That's why I'm really like bullish and excited about his fit as the number one receiver in this world right now in this offense as they kind of split the difference.
My only concern with Philadelphia in regards to their passing attack is that they went from A.J. Brown, who's one of the biggest, most physical receivers in the NFL. And man, they got really small, really fast. Devontae Smith, Mekhi Lemon, Dontavian Wicks. There's not a single guy here who's over 205 pounds. As a matter of fact, Dontavian Wicks, I believe, is the only player who's above 6 feet tall, right? Yeah. Hollywood Brown is in the mix. Really light.
I was going to say,
talk about Moore.
Like their depth receivers.
Elijah Moore is a depth guy too. Again, very small. It's just, they just don't have size at this position. And I would say like, hey, listen, from like, if you were to just isolate and say, do you like Mekhi Lemon? Yes. Do you like Devontae Smith? Yes. Do you like Dontavian Wicks? Maybe you say yes. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, but when you put them all together and then you talk about a guy in Jalen Hurts who, again, I've caped up for Jalen Hurts. I like Jalen Hurts. I think he's been unfairly criticized as a quarterback and as a passer. But still, though, I don't think anyone is thinking, okay, Jalen Hurts is like a pinpoint accurate passer, right? No. Like the strike zone for Jalen Hurts gets really small because of the size. Just the way that they have compiled the talent in this room. It just gives me a little bit of pause, man. Like, do the receivers match up with the quarterback, and does the quarterback match up with the receivers? That gives me probably the greatest pause when we're thinking about what is going on with the Eagles right now.
Yeah, I do think it's fair to wonder about that. And I think, you know, maybe if we were to give the Eagles decision makers a little bit of truth serum here, they are maybe kind of seeing like a little bit of a trial year for Jalen Hurts in this new offense, right? Like they've built what I think is I do think the room complements each other because of Smith's skill set. And I think Wicks is a good like third receiver. And I think Mekhi Lemon, it could really be like a high volume slot and kind of like within the archetype of receivers that are crushing it in the NFL right now. I think the room comes together well and fits the offense well, you know, but does Hurts fit with all those guys? I think it's fair to find out. Like, I think I'm not saying he can't do it, but it would be disingenuous to not admit that it is going to be an adjustment for him in this new style of offense.
Matt, can I say this one thing though? Can I say this one thing? Every other league or every other team in the league builds their talent around their franchise quarterback. The way that the Eagles have built this room either is a misunderstanding of what Jalen Hurts likes to do, or they don't view Jalen Hurts as a franchise quarterback. It's only one of those two things, right? So again, if you look around the league, I mean, dude, come on. Even Bryce Young, who no one thinks is a franchise quarterback, even Carolina has built their wide receiver room to help Bryce Young, right? Like every, like, again, you look around the NFL, it's just, this is how they do it. They find guys to fit their quarterback. I don't think that the Eagles have done that specifically. I think they have drafted good guys. I think they have good players, but when you put it together, it is very clearly not built for Jalen Hurts.
I think you can make a strong argument about that. I would also say that while if, you know, we were to pick, I would take Carson Wentz. I mean, I would take Jalen Hurts's career 10 times out of 10 over Carson Wentz's. Obviously he's been a more successful and better player in the NFL, but this is what they did with Carson Wentz. They were like, well, we're going to remember quarterback factory. Like, we're going to give ourselves an out on this when they drafted Jalen Hurts, you know, and like while Carson Wentz was still the established starter and they were able to kind of move on. I'd also say that, like, yes, Hurts has a specific way he likes to play. But that way he likes to play has led them into some roadblocks offensively. You know, that's just happened with this team. Even when they won the Super Bowl in 2024, they were not like tearing it apart as a passing game. So
it was their defense. Their defensive line was insane.
And Saquon Barkley, obviously, the run game, the whole deal, which I actually think the run game is one of the things that gets really under-discussed in this transition, but that's a pretty big thing. I don't want to derail us into like a Jalen Hurts, you know, debate and discussion, but I think there's something there. Like, just, hey, like I said, I'm not going to rule out that he adjusts and everything, but he does need to like adjust his style of play here. And I think that's fine. I think that's fine to not revolve the entire, I think we're way too quarterback centric, obviously, in the NFL right now, to be serious. Like, it's build a good team and like you can find, I don't know, whatever. But I think Hurts is a quarterback who can adjust, but he does need to adjust to fit this offense. I think one thing I wanted to say about Devontae Smith, his wingspan, 72nd percentile, like he actually does have a pretty good strike zone. He has longer arms than you think. He's been better at the catch point, like as a contested catch option than you think. And that's why I think he can get, number one, get off press coverage because he's got more length than you think. And he is a obviously really, really good technician. He was, you know, pretty honestly excellent working off press coverage, really honestly, since dating back to his prospect profile. Like, he was a really good press beater despite his outlier size and frame well, put a pin in that. I'm gonna come back to that one in a second.
Okay,
but like, he was much better against press coverage than you would think. Like, that was the reason I put him in tier one as a prospect, because he's so good from a release work perspective. Like, yes, in order to succeed at Devontae Smith's outlier size, you need to be an elite technician. And it's like, well, proof's in the pudding, folks. Like, watch the tape. He's an elite technician. Yeah. He won the damn Heisman Trophy, which never happens for receivers. So, yeah, right. Check box. It's been checked. Mm-hmm. He's done it. He's continued to do it in the NFL on an every year basis, even when he was playing outside X receiver. I think he will continue to do it this year. So, I have really good confidence that he can be awesome this year in this offense. If we were to just say his two limitations, I would say that keep him off being like the elite tier of players and maybe could be hindrances is, one, you mentioned the speed. Success rate on 9 routes below average while running not an insignificant amount of them, but still below average. Like, it's not the biggest concern in the world, because honestly, if you look at the most productive receivers in the NFL right now, everybody's go route rate is going down.
Way down.
You know, it's
way down.
At the same time, though, what we just talked about, Jalen Hurts, he loves to throw a go route, and he's really good at it too. Mm-hmm. He's really, really good at it. You know, he honestly, to give a lot of credit to Jalen Hurts, he activated AJ Brown on go routes in a way that he was not previously in Tennessee. Like, so, cause I think he doesn't get enough credit for doing that. So that might be a little bit of an odd mismatch. Although at the same time, I think Smith is a good enough contested catch receiver that it won't be like a damning problem. Slight limitations. Also, not really going to give you much after the catch is Devontae Smith.
Yeah,
that I think is actually where the frame ends up becoming the biggest problem for Devontae Smith. He was in space on 38.5% of his sample catches. He only broke, he went down on first contact on 70% of those plays. And like, that's kind of generally within the ballpark of his entire career. So I think that could be like the two limiting factors there for him. And I think Mekhi Lemon will probably end up being the guy who's better with the ball in his hands, which is, you know, why I think he'll be the more of the layup receiver in this offense. But overall, really excited about Smith in 2025. I think it is an overdue promotion to the number one receiver role, you know, and I think obviously just AJ Brown deciding those two deciding they were done with each other, Eagles and AJ Brown. I think it led to them being ready to promote Smith into the role that I think his talent is commensurate with, which is being a number one receiver in the league.
Yeah. Again, I think when we start talking about who is this year's JSN, the two guys that I look at is Devontae Smith and Ladd McConkey. So we'll see what's going on here. I really like the prospects here for Devontae Smith to kind of sort of, again, grow into this. Look, he was the number one. Then AJ Brown came through and he was, you know, he was the 1B. But now he's back in that like lead role. I'm excited to see him kind of take that mantle and see where that goes. I'm with you 100%. Okay, so there you go. By the way, a ton of new profiles are on the site right now. So go and check that out. We've got Garrett Wilson, Nico Collins, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Drake London, Christian Watson, a bunch of dudes that you want to read their profiles on. Quarterback profiles are coming. Running back profiles are coming here as well. So again, check out the website, receptionperception.com, and get it going. All right, for Matt Harmon, I'm James Coe. We got to go. But remember, it's never too late to chase your dreams. All right, peace.
As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. men's national team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.